Hey, hey, and welcome to the Meet Me Downstairs podcast. I'm your host, Britt, and I'm super happy to have you today. This podcast is dedicated to honoring the woman within the mother and the woman within ourselves, mother or not. We are talking about the divine feminine, educating ourselves on our body, learning how to love ourselves a little bit better, and meet some really interesting people along the way. So I hope you enjoy. Let's get to it. Hey, hey, and welcome back to another episode of Meet Me Downstairs. Today we are talking about the practice of natural parenting, intuitive parenting, conscious parenting. There are lots of names within this bucket, but essentially just kind of stepping away from all of the shoulds and expectations of what parenting has looked like in the past and moving into a more conscious and understanding way of communicating with our children. So before I get into things, I do just want to say that this community and podcast is not here to judge the way that parents do things or the way that you are currently doing things. I'm a mom and I'm excited by expanding my knowledge, and this is just a way of sharing different points of view. So please embrace what feels right and just leave what doesn't. Okay, our guest of honor today is the amazing Tracy Gillett. She is the founder, writer, and advocate behind the award-winning blog Raised Good, a guide to natural parenting in the modern world. Her Instagram is like a parenting Bible with like pure gold excerpts that I find deep comfort in. And I feel like a lot of the moms who engage with this podcast probably already follow her on social media. So if you do, you're going to be really excited that we get to chat with her today. She has reached millions of women worldwide and has some amazing offerings on her website and social. So be sure to follow and engage with her, and you can find her details in the episode notes. I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoyed recording it. Let's get to Tracy. All right. So we are here with Tracy, and I'm very excited because your Instagram page, I feel like, saves my life every day. And I'm sure you get that often. So thanks for being here and joining us.
It's my pleasure, and it very, very kind. So thank you for your words, and thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Yeah. So we're just going to get to know you a little bit with some kind of like silly, fun questions. So the first is sunrise or sunset?
Really, that's a really hard one. I love both, but I'd go with sunset if I have to choose one.
Sweet. Poetry books or novels?
Novels.
What about a favorite guilty pleasure?
I don't know if it's guilty, but I would just say chocolate.
Yeah. I like that that's not guilty.
Yeah, it shouldn't be guilty.
No. A feeling that you love to feel?
Freedom.
Ooh, good one. A feeling that you don't like to feel?
Disappointment.
Also a good one.
Yeah.
Any current streaming binges?
I'm actually watching a really old one, which is Australian. It came out like 20 years ago. It's called A Secret Life of Us, and it's just taking me back to like, yeah, I watched it 20 years ago and now I'm watching it again.
Oh.
And it's from Melbourne where I grew up, and it's just making me feel like home. So oh, I'm watching that again.
Is that the one that had Chris Hemsworth in it?
No. It's got Joel Edgerton in it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. He's
gone on to be, into movies and stuff.
So fun. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
A lot of fun.
What about a musician that you love right now?
Bon Iver is one of my favorite.
Yeah, melts my soul.
Been a favorite for a long time.
Definitely. One of your favorite things about being a woman?
Again, a hard one. But I think probably just the experience of pregnancy and birth and becoming a mum and all the stuff that goes along with it. And I remember just feeling like, when you have your baby and then start breastfeeding or doing something, you're just like in awe of what your body can do. So I think that experience probably trumps everything.
It's pretty magical. Well, the last one here is one of your favorite things about being a mom. So I guess that could work, but
I think favorite thing about being a mom, again, I think a really hard one, because there's so much that there's so much that motherhood brings to our lives. But yeah, I think the probably just the experience of unconditional love, like just the size of the love that you have for your children. I think I was really blindsided by that. Until you experience it. Yeah. It's just, it's amazing. And it deepens all of the other relationships that you have as well. And
absolutely.
And just the bittersweet side of motherhood, which is the watching your kids grow up and like all the amazing new stages and things that they do and experiencing the world through their eyes. And at the same time, realizing that they're not so little and that it goes so fast. That they're just such a marker of time.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does fly by. It's great. They say that, and then you're like, well, okay, it really does.
Yeah.
But perfect. Well, thank you for that. So, I just love everything that you do. And so I figure just the best place to start is maybe just telling us a little bit about what gentle parenting, natural parenting is, and how you kind of define your role with, you know, helping families kind of exist more connectedly, I guess.
I think my role, I'm just a mom, and I shouldn't say just a mom, but I really see my role as just kind of sharing my experience and lighting the path for others who might want to follow a similar journey. Because I think this sort of side of natural parenting, gentle parenting isn't the mainstream,
right?
And it's not what we expect. So yeah, just showing others what it's like. And then if that inspires you, if it makes you feel empowered, then that makes me really happy. And really just wanting to help lift parents up and also to help children to be seen, because I think our kids aren't really always seen for who they are in our societies. And I called what I was sharing at the start natural parenting. And yeah, you're right, there's lots of different terms that are out there. There's gentle parenting and positive parenting and conscious parenting. And they've all got their own kind of, you know, what they bring to the table. I think most of us that are on this path are dabbling in a bit of all of those different things. But for me, natural parenting, that term came to mind just because it was really how what I was sharing was more along the lines of how I thought that humans were designed to parent naturally. If we were dropped on an island like yours, with no people on it, if we were dropped on a deserted island, you know, how would we parent? If there were no baby stores, if there were no cribs, if there was no nothing, how would we just intuitively parent? And so natural parenting for me is along the lines of how our species was designed to parent and how our babies are expecting to be parented, and that if we can get into that flow with them, then we're going with the current. We're kind of it, and it becomes easier. I feel that it becomes a lot easier. And I think at the core of it is connection, is just always parenting through connection and strengthening connection and non-coercive methods and holding limits with compassion and emotion coaching and modeling instead of, you know, saying use your manners, just modeling, using those things, being the change we want to see in the world, as they say, like being who we want our children to become.
Absolutely. It's a great way to think of it like that. And I think like the pros and cons of being in this, you know, never-ending world of access and information, it can feel like overwhelming or like there's so much coming at you and like you're just trying to kind of find your way. There's like societal judgments, familial judgments, like self-judgments, like all these things that you're having to kind of manage all whilst like raising a human. And then, you know, here, like when I think of like or listen to psychologists or go to therapy myself or whatever, and they talk about these like formative years of your kid and the pressure of like, oh my god, I could really like mess them up. But I anyways, that's like a whole other thing. But I think I like what you say about, you know, understanding our children, because they can be misunderstood a lot. And yeah, maybe like if you can take us through that a little bit, because it is a big role that we play as our kids' parents. And a lot of the time in the early years, which are so stressful for mom, dad, like whoever is involved. And then we have a kid who can't really communicate in the same way that we do. So it's such a difficult like paradigm of relationships that you're trying to navigate all whilst like transitioning into a mother. Like how can we kind of like go through that in a more understanding way, if that makes sense?
It's really hard. You know, we come to parenting with so much baggage that we don't even know that we have. We come to parenting with so many judgments and that we make of ourselves and that we feel like society puts on us as well. And we've been conditioned to be in this society that rewards good behavior.
Yeah.
And that punishes bad behavior. And so when we become parents, we're waiting to get the gold star for being a good parent, and we're not wanting to mess it up in other people's eyes.
Yes.
And yeah, I don't know where I got it from, but I have never really, I think my dad was certainly a big influence. I remember growing up and, you know, being worried about going to school if I got something wrong or hadn't done my homework or whatever. And he was like, what do you care? Like, who cares? Like, you know, like you figure out what works for you. It doesn't matter what other people think. And it's very hard to let that go, what other people think. And I don't think it's healthy to just not worry at all what other people think. But we can't worry so much about what everybody thinks, or we're not pleasing ourselves and we're not looking after our kids in the way that they need. So really, I think holding your child as your biggest parenting critic, they're really the only ones, they're the ones that matter most. And then, you know, perhaps your co-parent, your partner, and maybe family, but not necessarily. Like, they had their go at doing it, and now you get to do it how you want to do it. And we don't need to make the same decisions that our parents made just to validate what they did. But I think coming to it with compassion, like if we are doing things differently to what our parents did, and if it is triggering for them, and getting them to understand that we love them unconditionally, we know that they did their absolute best that they could. And now we're learning more and more about the brain. Like, they say that the 1990s was the decade of the brain, where we learned more about brain development in that decade than we've learned ever before. And so we have learned a lot more since our parents were parenting, and it's okay to make changes. So yeah, I think coming to parenting with just a real curiosity, I think that's one of the biggest things that I try to bring to parenting. When my child is doing something that's funny, like, I'm like, what is he doing? Like, we were sitting at the dinner table the other night and he just won't sit still at the dinner table. And that's fine. Like, he's an 8-year-old boy. Like, that's what he's supposed to be doing, getting up and running around and stuff. But I was like, just come and sit down. And he was like, he'd had his plate there and he got off the table, and then he was just crouching down, looking at the table, like at his eye level. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, just come and sit here. And he was like, I'm balancing my knife on my plate and I'm having a look at it from like this angle and stuff. And like, if we can just bring a bit of curiosity to it, instead of just making assumptions about what our kids are doing and why they're doing it.
Yeah.
And I think I heard very early on, I think toddlers get a really bad rap, and I just adore toddlers. They're just some of the most honest people on the planet, and they only have the ability to feel one strong emotion at a time. So they don't have the ability to be holding two things at once, which we can do as adults, but they can't do that. They're either really happy, really angry, really disappointed, really sad, really mad. But we tend to overestimate their emotional abilities while at the same time underestimating their physical abilities. So we're trying to stop them doing things and keep them safe and do all these things. So I think it's curiosity and trying to reset our expectations, always asking why we're doing something. Is it just because we have a belief about that from childhood that we've never questioned? Is that right? Can we change it? And approaching parenting is just a journey and of imperfection. You're going to get it wrong every day. I get it wrong every day, and it's a chance to start again and repair with your child and teach them that relationships can handle mess ups and that we can get through it together.
Yes. I actually really like that, because, you know, handling imperfections is just a part of life and a part of everyday life. And certainly all relationships that we have, whether it's friends, parents, siblings, whoever, like, they're messy. It's never, never straightforward. I think it's just hard to feel this pressure of like wanting to do a good job, like wanting to be a good mom. And then, you know, I find it so triggering to be a mom. Like, you know, my kid forces me to see some maybe not so nice things about myself. And like, I definitely feel like I'm at the surface way more than probably ever. Like, I can, without him, I feel like you can bury things or like hold things down, but kids have a way to kind of just like push you and trigger you. And it makes me wonder, like, why do you think this, you know, parenting has such a visceral effect on us? Is it because the connection is so close, or because we're more raw at an early stage, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, they talk about, you know, inner child work, which I remember when I first heard that term, I was like, that sounds a bit woo-woo. Like, what is this inner child stuff? But we all have an inner child that, you know, I said in the, at the start, the disappointment is one of the emotions that I, one of the feelings that I find difficult to deal with. And my son is actually pretty good with disappointment. He's more resilient to it than I am. And one of the reasons for that is when I was little, if I was disappointed, my mom was trying to do such a good job that she would distract me from the disappointment. Like, come to have an ice cream, do something different. Like, don't worry about it. I'll fix it. Like, we'll figure it out. I didn't feel that, go into that disappointment and really feel it and then come out of it and learn how to regulate that emotion. And so when I see something that's disappointing to my son, I feel it like, oh my God, like, this is, and I'm that 5-year-old again. Yeah. And feeling that disappointment that I couldn't feel properly and process when I was a little kid. And now I can help my son do that. And at the same time, I'm kind of I'm kind of reparenting myself and giving myself what I needed when I was 5 or 4 or 8 or 10. And so this is how we can evolve alongside our kids. Yeah. And I think instead of looking at it as a not nice part of yourself, I would just look at it as like, they're just exposing a wound that is under the surface that's been there hidden for many, many years.
Yeah.
And your child just has a way of triggering it. And they kind of do it at the ages that you were. Like, you get triggered at, you know, when you've got a 4-year-old, like, what was happening for you when you were 4? And I know a lot of therapists will talk about that with like inner child work and stuff. So I think it's like having compassion for yourself when you're triggered. And again, just approaching it with curiosity, like, you know, wow, I'm feeling this emotion of like, I'm feeling really angry. Like, why is that? That is not in proportion to what is happening right now. Why am I so angry? Like, this is not a big deal. And it's because there's, you know, there's now 2 children in the room and you're one of them. You know, you're needing to parent yourself at the same time and just hold compassion for that kid that needed something different when you were that age. But if we don't help our kids deal with their feelings and their emotions and their needs, when we're only dealing with behavior, which is what the conventional parenting paradigm is, then they just put their needs below their conscious awareness, which is what we've done for many, many years. We just shove those needs down, just shove those feelings down. But they don't go away. They're still in there. And then we have kids and they're triggered. And I hear people, I haven't worked with kids before having a child, but I hear people talking about, you know, like they'll work with other people's kids and the other people's kids don't trigger them. Like they can be doing yes. the same thing, but your kid will trigger you because yeah. it's your kid.
Yes. It's just like the relationship is so close. And you're right. Like we do. Well, this kind of leads into my next question a little bit. You know, like there's a reason for a reaction, like within our kids, like maybe anger is really stemmed from frustration. And we have those things within ourselves too, because there are times when I just get angry. And like you said, the reaction is not in line or level to the thing, like the trigger point. But I thought it was an interesting way of understanding our kids better, because I do find that when I can bring in this like additional layer of observation, when I have the mental capacity to do that, and I'm looking at my son and I see that he's angry and I understand that this anger is stemming from something else, it does help me to manage the situation, you know, a little bit better. And I think you called it like responding versus reacting in one of your posts that I saw had seen, which I thought was great. So maybe you can take us through that concept a little bit deeper.
Yeah. Well, I think reacting is just like the immediate response, like without thought, without pausing. And sometimes we need to react. Like if our child is about to run onto the road, we don't have time to like do, and there's a truck coming down the road. We don't have time to like do some punch. We just get grab them and get them off the road. And so sometimes we need reactions that are very fast. But we need to not approach parenting as an emergency. There's occasionally an emergency, but parenting generally is not an emergency. And teaching a lesson is not an emergency, and it doesn't need to be done in the moment that the child is having the challenge. And it's best not done in that moment, because if the child is having an emotional meltdown, they're all in their emotional brain. They're not in their thinking brain at all. And they can't hear what you're saying if you're trying to teach them a lesson about something. It's not going to have an impact. Yeah, so responding is really trying to slow yourself down. Like that's the most important thing, is just to try to slow yourself down. So try to pause however you do that best. If that's taking a couple of deep breaths, it might be walking out of the room, like giving yourself a timeout. I'm against timeouts for kids, but I just need to go outside and just take a deep breath and then come back and then we'll talk about this. So trying to just get out of that immediate kind of like out of your own sympathetic nervous system, which is like that fight, flight, freeze response.
Yeah.
And really calm down so that you're able to see your child. And I think one of the tools that I've used over the years is just say what you see. So I remember my son one time, I think he was about 3, and my husband was traveling for work and I was trying to get some work done, and I can't remember what Tom was doing, but he was trying to get my attention about something. And I was on my computer just, you know, trying to get this email out, like just this one thing. And so I'm stressed. And then he's like yelling, mom, come and look at this thing. Like, mom, I'm like, yeah, buddy, I'll be there in a minute. Like I'll be there in a second. And he's repeating it like 3, 4, 5 times. And I'm repeating the same thing, but I'll be there in a second. I'll be there in a second. I'll be there in a second. And then he came up and he just hit me on the leg.
Yeah.
And you know, conventional wisdom might be like, how dare you hit me like that? We don't hit in our family. And a punishment might come out of that. But I love this say what you see thing. And so I'd heard it just prior to this event. And I just said to my son, wow, like took a breath, tried to respond instead of react. Just like, wow, you've been really patient. You've just really wanted me to come and see that thing that you were doing. And I keep saying, I'm going to come in a second. And it's 10 minutes later and I still haven't come, and you're really frustrated. And so you tried to get my attention verbally and you couldn't get it. And so then you tried to get it physically, and I understand. And afterwards, we don't hit in our family.
Yeah.
So the lesson can come later, but really connecting to that emotion, but responding takes a lot of slowing down. Yeah. And not approaching parenting as an emergency. Some lessons, you know, from something that's happened where you're like, wow, I really need to teach my kid this skill that they need, or teach them a lesson about what happened. That might come an hour later, might come a week later. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't have to come right then. We've got to keep our kids safe. But yeah, I think responding is really about cutting yourself off at the past and really trying to slow yourself down. Get back into your own thinking brain, get out of your reactive brain, and calm yourself down before you respond.
And I guess in the times when you don't quite make that happen and the big reaction does come out, or the anger comes out, or, you know, however that manifests, I suppose, you know, how to kind of heal that situation. Is it, you know, owning up and apologizing and sort of saying, you know, mom got angry? Like, how would you then, because that happens, like, I'm telling you, and then there are times where I'm just like, oh crap, I did not handle that well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's life, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, and this is a thing, it's not about being perfect, it's about trying, it's about committing to a certain type of relationship.
Yeah.
And then when you have a rupture in the connection, a rupture in the relationship, then you repair it. And that rupture and repair is such a great opportunity, again, to teach kids that that life isn't perfect, that people aren't perfect, that we can make mistakes, and that when we do, we can own up to them and apologize, like you say. So that's the first thing I do, is just to apologize, and to apologize authentically, not to be like, well, mom got angry, but it was just because you hadn't put your toys away. Like, that's not an apology. So yeah, just owning up and just saying, yeah, I'm so sorry. That must have made you feel really scared when I yelled at you like that. And I'm working on it.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to upset you like that. And kids are so forgiving. Yeah. Reconnecting, like building that connection back again, however that is for you in that moment, you know, whether it's then just playing with your child, giving them your full attention, some special time, building that connection again. It's really important for them to know that, like, the world's not perfect, and mm-hmm. they're going to be in relationships with other people and things are going to go wrong. And it's a really great lesson to learn that relationships Absolutely. Are strong and that they can weather those kind of storms.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really special takeaways. So I thought that maybe we could go over a couple common stereotypes or phrases that I think you can hear. Cause I think when you think, when it comes to sort of like natural parenting or conscious parenting or whatever it is, that there are a lot of stereotypes that can kind of come up. And I figured we could just go through a couple and maybe break them down from your thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so the first one that I have here is, if you hold your baby too much, you're going to spoil them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
It's just so silly, isn't it?
I know. And it's funny, I heard this even just, I mean, my son is 2.5, and I've heard this more than once from different people.
Yeah. 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 You definitely hear it. And it comes out of, I'm creating a sleep course at the moment. And so as part of that, I've dived right into, the history of sleep training and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And reading some of what was written, you know, in the 1920s and, earlier, the late 1800s, by doctors, and it was like, yeah, you shouldn't, you know, you must only let your child sit on your lap for 10 minutes a day, and if they do an especially good job, then pat them on the head, and you know, otherwise you might spoil them. And and so this language kind of started to come into the parenting world, like, way back when, and it's kind of held on. And it's really sad, because the total opposite is true. Babies need to be held. They thrive on touch and connection. And I talk a bit about attachment. And in the first year, Dr. Gordon Neufeld has 6 stages of attachment that he talks about. And in the first year, the only way that babies attach to us is through the senses. So through touch and smell and taste and sight and hearing. And so that's how they attach to us. They're born so completely immature. Their brain is only 25% developed. in the first 3 years, it'll get to 80%. And the experiences that we give them determines what that brain is going to look like. And touch is such a huge part of that, particularly in the first year. So yeah, I just made it a habit to hold my child as much as I could, to hold my baby as much as I could. We co-slept, I baby wore all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think with the, you know, like sometimes we can't hold our babies all the time. We need to have a shower, or need a break. If our arms are getting sore, like, you know, prams and little baby seats and stuff like that can be really useful. But I think this sort of container baby syndrome is taken over a bit, and we think that babies are okay in containers, but no, they really need to be in our arms. Like, yeah. It's total rubbish.
I agree. And then this one kind of comes very closely with that, is that they need to learn how to self-soothe.
Yeah, that's a big one. And that's that fuels so many, how do I put this? So many
like debates, opinions, thoughts. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, the idea of self-soothing makes parents scared that they need to sleep train. So that's one of the things that self-soothing is used for. So the idea of self-soothing is that you need to leave your baby alone to go to sleep on their own so that they can learn to self-soothe. And if you don't leave them on their own to go to sleep, then you're failing as a mother, because you're not teaching them this very important skill of self-soothing. It's total BS. And babies can't self-soothe because they don't have the brain development to be able to self-soothe. So self-soothing really means that you're able to regulate your own emotions. Babies with such an undeveloped brain, they need a prefrontal cortex and able to problem solve, or to be able to think their way through, you know, what's going on for them. And they literally don't have that. Like, it's not developed. So babies need us, and toddlers and kids need us to help co-regulate their emotions with them hundreds, thousands of times. And then they learn healthy ways to regulate their emotions.
Yeah.
And then eventually they'll be able to regulate their own emotions when they grow up. But their brains aren't fully developed until they're in their like mid to late 20s. It's really variable. Yeah. And I shared a conversation with Nathan Wallace last year for the summit. And he just loves all this neuroscience stuff. And it's different. Like, a firstborn girl can have their brain fully developed at age 18, 19. Like, a second or third born boy might not have their brain developed until they're like 28. Like, oh, there's huge variability. And our kids need us to help them along the way. And if you think about, you know, if you had a rough day, if your boss had a go at you at work, and you're able to hold it together at work, but then you get home and your partner gives you a hug and you just melt down and cry.
Yeah.
He's helping you regulate your emotions. Like, we don't self-soothe as adults. You know, we go to things like guilty pleasures. If we're having a bad day, we're like, I'll go have some chocolate.
Yes.
Or we'll binge watch something on Netflix, or we'll call a friend, or we'll do something. We'll go for a walk. We'll meditate, like do some yoga. Like, babies can't do that.
These are tools that we've been able to kind of cultivate with age and life,
and we want to be able to teach them healthy ways to regulate their emotions, because there's plenty of unhealthy ways for them to regulate their emotions as they get older. But one of the things that we really want to teach them is that they can find soothing within relationships by coming to people. So and ultimately teaching them to be able to rely on themselves, but they can only do that if we teach them how to do that. And we don't do that by dropping them in the deep end and leaving them in a crib to cry. It's a really dangerous myth. And it's another one that's just total BS.
Well, on to the next one is, you have to show them who's in control. Don't let them win.
So I don't think we have the right to control anybody.
Yes. Barely even ourselves.
We don't have the right to try to control somebody else. Imagine if we were trying to control our husbands or our partners. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if you don't speak to me nicely, I'm going to take away your iPhone. Like,
yeah.
That wouldn't, like, or I'm going to, like, take the keys away to the car. Like, that's how we try to control kids, through this, like, random punishments, like,
yeah.
And sometimes it's physical, like I'll take away the iPad or take away this, or you'll go to your room. Or it can be emotional, like I'll give you the silent treatment, you won't be welcome in my presence, like psychological. So this control stuff, even if we could control another person, I don't think we have the right to. I don't think it morally or ethically right to try to do that. No one likes to be pushed around. Adults don't like to be pushed around by their government, and kids don't want to be pushed around by their parents. So we don't have the right to control them, but we are in charge. So they are little people who we need to teach them how to get on in the world. And they are not emotionally, physically ready to be dealing with stuff. They can't be in charge. Like, kids aren't in charge. When kids start to think that they're in charge, then there's a whole other set of problems that come. But we can have the energy that says to them, like, we've got this. Like, I've got you. I know what you need. The in charge energy is very different to the in control energy. And I don't know if it comes from, like, as adults, we were pushed around when we were little kids. And then you get to be a parent or a teacher or something when you're in charge of something smaller than you, that people just think, well, I got pushed around and now it's my turn to push
around. Can be for some people. Yeah, it might be. Yeah. Well, what do you think are like healthier ways to kind of go about that? Because it is easy. Like, so this is an example from me. Like in the morning, getting my son ready to go to preschool, you know, he wants to like have fun and laugh and like, sometimes I'm in a rush. If I have a meeting at work, like I have to get his clothes on. So I get to the point where I'm like, literally just like, I'm just going to put them on you then. Cause we have to go, you know? And then like, eventually he's like, oh, fine. And like, I, you know, put them on. Or there's like moments of frustration. Like, how do you think we can, like, he hasn't learned that mom has to do this thing. I mean, this happens every single day, I feel like. So I mean, how are ways that we can, I don't know, get the message across? Or is it literally just like time? I mean, that's a small example. There's bigger things. And
no, I think it's a great example because it's universal. You know, the longest distance can be between your kitchen and the car. Like, how to get from like, and I have an 8-year-old. And it's still not straightforward to like get out the door. Like when I go out on my own for the day and I can just get out of the car and go into a shop and like, I'm like, why am I moving so fast? Like, this is unbelievable how fast I can move. Like when you've got a kid, like life is just going to slow down. So I think part of it is, you know, realistic expectations, like 2.5, like that's awesome. But he's like, you'll be saying to him like, okay, well, it's time to get ready and get dressed. And, you know, the shoes are at the front door. And he'll be like, okay, cool. Like the shoes are at the front door. Like, here I go. But then on the way to the front door, there's like a toy on the ground. And now he's interested in the toy and he can't, and all he can think about is the toy. He can't remember that you said shoes. Like he doesn't care. They don't have any understanding of time. Yeah. Like, and that is just the wonderful thing about being a kid, like just that total in the moment stuff. And it's really frustrating and it's really hard when you're in a rush and trying to get somewhere. So yeah, I love playful parenting. And I talked to Lawrence Cohen recently, who wrote Playful Parenting. And it's one of my favorite parenting books. And he just talks a lot about just bringing play into it. Also, How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen is a fantastic book. And it has some really awesome ideas in it for that very thing. And one of the things with shoes is that they're like, pretend the shoes are alive, like,
right,
you know, or give the shoes a name, like, and then start talking like you're the shoe and the shoe needs a foot. And you know, get really playful with it. And I get that sometimes you don't have the energy for it. You're like, I've got a big thing on, like, I don't have time for this, like, playful stuff. But it's amazing how quick it can be and how much time it can save. My son is really into being fast in terms of not to like get in the car, like
running.
But he loves racing and stuff. So if I'm like, I'm going to set a timer and like see how long it takes us to like get from here to there. Or if I make us both smoothies and I'm like, he's just going to take forever to drink this smoothie, I'm going to have to ask him like 5 times and it's going to get in this, you know, an hour later, it's like, let's have a race with the smoothies. I'll give you a head start. Like when I want him to get dressed in the morning, lately this has happened and I stumbled across this which is, I'm really happy about it, but just trying to get him to get dressed. He's just like, he'll get his jeans on and then he's looking around the room and not keep doing the next thing. I'm like, just like, come on. And then I decided I'll tell him, I'll see if you can get dressed faster than I can have a shower. And I didn't think he'd fall for it. And he's like, he thinks that's awesome. And I get to have a long shower because I need him to win. So sometimes just bringing some playful things into it can really help with kids, seeing it through their eyes. Like, it's not interesting for the child to get out the door fast. Like, even though they know that it's important to you, that it helps you get there, role-playing, practicing things. But yeah, I think playful parenting is one of the best things for kids of that age to try to make it fun and interesting. You know, I've even had some parents say, like, they'll just let their kids talk to the child, like, at another time, like, say, like, so we have this problem where in the morning I need to do this. And what do you want to do in the morning? Like, you really want some time for play. Like, but I also really need you to get dressed. Like, how can we figure this out? Like, trying to figure it out in the moment is not necessarily the best thing. Trying to figure it out at another time. And he might come up with some ideas. Like, I've heard parents say that their kids will just go to sleep in their clothes and then they're dressed for the morning and then they're done. It depends on where your boundaries are and what you're willing to, you know, roll with as well. So yeah, I think there's lots of different ideas, but yeah, going at it head on doesn't always work.
That's cool though. I do like that. And then my final kind of question is consequences versus punishments, which is a unique spin on, teaching a lesson, I guess. Yeah. Talk to me about that a little bit.
So the word consequences, we bring in words to make something sound more palatable. So the word consequences has kind of come in, which is just punishment. Like, it's just another word for punishment. Like, comes from a threat. Like, if you do this thing, then you will lose this privilege. That's not really a consequence. That's just a punishment, but we're calling it a consequence because it sounds better. Yeah, I don't do consequences at all. Natural consequences are another thing, because a natural consequence is just something happens. We don't have any control over it. It is just something that happens. So I shared an example in a blog post of when my son was a little bit younger. We were going out for a walk, going down to the playground, and I could see that it was starting to lightly rain outside. And so I said to my son, I think it looks like it's raining outside. I think you should put on a rain jacket. He says, "What? No, I don't want to put on a rain jacket." I'm like, "Okay, you sure you don't want to put on a rain?" I don't want to put on a rain jacket. I said, "But it's raining outside. Like, you don't want to, you'll get wet." "I don't want to put on a rain jacket. I'm not putting on a rain jacket." So I'm like, I'm not getting into some power struggle or forcing him to, like, he's got bodily autonomy. I respect his bodily autonomy. The natural consequence of that is that you would get wet. We'll go for a walk and you'll get wet. That's what's going to happen. So we go for the walk and it starts raining pretty hard and I've got my rain jacket on and he doesn't have his rain jacket on and he's getting wet. And he looks up at me, he's like, "Mom, like, I got it wrong. I should have had my rain jacket." So I had his rain jacket in my backpack.
Here
it's okay, buddy. Like, here's the rain jacket. You can put the rain jacket on. And so some people might say, well, the natural consequence should be just finish that he gets wet. I'm like, well, he got wet and he did get a bit wet and he learned that if you don't bring a rain jacket, then you're going to get wet.
So the lesson was already learned.
The lesson was already learned, but he also was looking at me wearing my rain jacket and I'm in charge. So this is where it comes in, that I'm in charge. So it's my responsibility as a parent to be like, well, I'm still going to bring the rain jacket because firstly, I want him to know that I care about him. Secondly, I want him to know that I'm in charge, that I know that it's going to rain and that he's going to need his rain jacket. And I can't have him looking at me wearing my rain jacket. And I didn't want to end up that we end up going home because I want to go to the playground and I want to go and play in the rain and have fun. So I give him the rain jacket and he's, "Oh, thank you so much for bringing the rain jacket, Mom. Like, that's so kind." And then it was about a week later, we were all going out. And we were going out in the car, so me, my husband, and my son, and we were getting ready to go. And I had my rain jacket, and Tom grabs his rain jacket, and his dad hadn't grabbed his rain jacket. And then so my son goes into the cupboard and gets his dad's rain jacket. It's like, Dad, you'll need your rain jacket.
That's really sweet.
Natural consequences are things that we don't need to think about. Like, they're just going to happen. We can still be empathetic and help our kids out and just be kind and compassionate in those moments. Like, we know what's going to happen, but we've got so much experience, like, because we've been wet before. And so it's imparting that onto them. But yeah, so learning through natural consequences, I think, is awesome.
Thank you for doing this. My final question I ask this to every guest, because I kind of created this podcast as a way to honor the woman within the mother and just like make space for her, you know, whatever that may be, whether it's conversation, education, time, a coffee, like whatever that is. So what is something that you do in your life that honors the woman within you?
So over the last few years, I've really just started to honor my cycle a lot more and just to become a bit more in tune with that and to know and to give myself space, like when I don't want to be around lots of people and I want to have time to myself and give myself rest. And then know other times of the month when I do want to go out and be around others. So I think, trying to, instead of like pushing myself all the time, always pushing myself to be productive, like trying to come back into that like feminine energy at different times of the month, like to nourish myself. Yeah, I would say that's one of the things that I've been doing recently.
I have also been doing that recently. I've never been more connected to my cycle or aware of it either in my life, which is something I wish I had known maybe when I was 14 and like getting my first period, but you know, I'm learning it now at 31. So that's okay. Tracy, thank you so, so much for just sharing your time and your stories and your wisdom and knowledge. It's been a true pleasure. I really am grateful for everything that you are doing. Like when I say that you're Instagram account like truly helps me, it really, really does. And I know many people, like friends of mine, who feel the same way about you. So thank you.
Thank you. That's very kind. That's why I do what I do, is just to try to, to try to help lift other mums up. And a lot of the time what I'm posting is what I need to be posting as well. So I'm on this journey at the same time. And I would just encourage all mums to just embrace imperfection and drop the judgment. And if there's ever anything that I say that you don't gel with, like, that's fine. Like, you just take what works for you and leave the rest, and and figure out your own path. Like, nobody knows your family like you do and what your child needs more than you do.
Well, thank you for being here.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening in. As always, if you enjoyed, leave us a review. It really supports our channel and it helps it to grow and let other people who might be interested in this stuff find us. And then also please just share it, subscribe, love it, whatever it is that you guys do to keep supporting. We appreciate it so much, and we will chat on the next episode.